Hold on a second, please. I am almost done with my selfie here. I am naked in the studios here at PRN. See, you know what? Kim Kardashian influenced me because she's getting so much notoriety, and everything in my studio is just falling over right now. She's getting so much notoriety because of her naked selfie. I think she's such a genius. Obviously, we know she has very good taste in men. Husband Kanye. And I love the fact that her picture's going viral worldwide, and she's getting so pissed of it. But she's written, well, when you're like, I have nothing to do and nothing to wear, I can take a selfie. But she admitted this picture was taken pre-baby. No kidding. Okay, the visually impaired guy here in the room knew that. So, no, there's no selfie of me naked in the PRN studios right now, and that's a horrible sight to even conjure up. Hey, it's Mark Farrell, live in New York City. The weather is incredible. People are walking around the streets. They're looking like they're on Xanax or something. Everybody is just smiling ear to ear. It is so beautiful out here. Balmy weather for the last couple of days. And we so deserve it on the East Coast. It's been a brutal winter. Feet and feet and feet of snow. But hopefully that's in the rearview mirror. And looking forward to spring. As a matter of fact, we're daylight savings time is this weekend. Rock and roll. How cool is that? More daylight. Got a great show coming your way. Last week we had a gentleman on who's the director of Real Abilities Film Festival, which is a festival presenting award-winning films by and about people with disabilities. Today we're going to have one of the directors on about a great movie that she produced, directed, Do You Dream in Color, about four high school teens. Imagine, I mean, when you're in high school, it's so difficult and arduous and ambivalence, and the angst is huge. But now add in the component of being blind. It's a great movie about four blind teenagers and how they overcome adversity, bullying, ridiculing, to achieve what they want in life. Great stuff. Abigail Fuller is the director, and she'll be coming up in just a few minutes. She's on the West Coast, so we'll let her sleep in and or get a cup of coffee and wake up. So how you doing out there? Love to hear you. Show's Insight on PRN, Progressive Radio Network. I always like to hear your input. 888-874-4888, 874-4888. I had a guest on the show a couple weeks ago, and she started a great company called Able Denim. She had a sister or brother in her family who is disabled, and they couldn't wear clothing that really fit them, and they wanted to wear jeans. So, of course, she's like, okay, I'm a designer. Let me really figure this out. So, and she's been doing very, very great, great work, and I'm happy to say that Tommy Hilfiger, obviously everyone knows Tommy Hilfiger, launched an adaptive collection for children with disabilities. This was a few weeks ago. But it's an interesting backstory because a nonprofit organization called Runway of Dreams worked with Tommy Hilfiger to launch this adaptive version of all kinds of styles. And these are all the styles that are out in stores now. So it's not like the children with disabilities and or adults are going to wear a separate line. So they'll be able to feel just like everybody else who loves the Tommy Hilfiger line. So the woman is named Mindy Shire. She's a fashion designer and mom. And one day her son came home who has muscular dystrophy and asked, you know, I want a pair of jeans. And can you imagine being a parent and your kid says to you, I want a pair of jeans, and they have a disability that prevents them from wearing jeans? I mean, your heart would break. I mean, your heart would is probably broken on so many levels because of how arduous it is for them to complete many tasks in life, simple tasks that we always take for granted. And here your kid wants to wear jeans. Well, what to do if you're a fashion designer? Well, he was eight back then, so she decided, listen, I'm going to make this work. So as far as she knew back then, you know, this there was nothing out there. So she did her research and eventually teamed up with people at Tommy Hilfiger. And made it work. And she said, as far as she knows, this will be the first mainstream. Certainly, we talked about Able Jeans, mainstream big-name brand to do an adaptive clothing collection. And this will be a huge initiative for the fashion industry. Because think about this. There are 55 million people that have disabilities in the United States. 55 million. Again, these are ranging the gamut in terms of disabilities. It could be diabetes, could be paraplegic, you name it. But the apparel, all apparel is, you know, is from mainstream Tommy Hilfiger, the spring collection. And it's, you know what's really cool about this? It's amazing for us and for anyone for to witness this, and especially for other kids to witness this journey and show them that, you know, you can make a true difference. And if you believe in something, you know, you can make it happen. So obviously, as a parent myself, and many, many parents listening or soon to be parents, or people who never even dream of being a parent, turn your computer off right now, or your smartphone, or whatever. But just kidding. We never want you to turn PRN.FM off. The reality is, you know, you'll do anything for your kid. And it's so true. When something, even just as simple as clothing. But clothing is identity. I mean, we all chose what you're wearing today. Look down. Do you like what you picked out today? Or were you like me when it was 3:45 this morning, you picked out your clothes in the dark in my in the bedroom where my wife is sleeping. I try to be so quiet. So I tiptoe around. I'm like, I think this is a blue shirt, maybe black. I don't want to turn a light on. But we make choices every day. And clothing really kind of complements who we are. Kind of tells the world, you know, this is a general statement here, a macro statement. You know, who we are, what we're about. It's been relaxed so much more in the last 10 years, certainly with corporate dress downs. It used to be corporate relaxed Fridays. And now with the, you know, the tech boom happened and still happening, the world's gotten a little bit more relaxed. Certainly the United States has. I think the exclusion is mostly the financial industries sector, except for Wall Street. I know those guys are still kind of buttoned up a little bit. But it's just great for kids with disabilities to feel like they belong. And why shouldn't they feel like they belong? Because when I speak to students, colleges, corporations, everyone, my mantra is my difference makes me stronger. Yeah, sure, we're all different in so many different ways. The way we think, the way we react, the way we talk, the food we eat, how we speak, etc. Who we believe in terms of faith, religion. I don't have a faith because I kind of like Sundays to sleep in and read the paper and all that jazz. But maybe that'll change someday. I don't know. I don't suspect so. But anyway, I digress. The reality is it's so cool to be able to be different. And a lot of people, you know, use clothing. I mean, for example, in the last 2 days, as I mentioned, it's been so warm around here. And it's been great because all the layers have been shed. And instead of seeing coats and overcoats and, you know, big woolly puffy coats, you know, the wool coats, I'm sorry, the down coats, you know, so women and men are just stripping down. You see people in T-shirts, tank shops. Let me start that again. Tank shirts. not enough coffee yet today. And it's great. It's very, very cool. So it presents style, especially in New York City. Other major cities, wherever you're listening, for our international listeners, whether you're listening in Lisbon, Prague, wherever you are, you know, there's style galore, and you can live anywhere and represent yourself and have your own identity. But it's great when someone so young, you know, wants to be able to fit in. And why not? Some people don't want to fit in, and that's your choice as well. But it's very, very cool. And of course, going back to Kim Kardashian, she wants to be everything. And I'm sure there's no coincidence at all, as I mentioned before, that Kanye's album actually is dropping soon. And I can't believe this guy is so in debt. I can't believe. Actually, did you see this the other day? He was actually tweeted something about, I didn't see this, but I read this because I wouldn't read his tweets. But he was tweeting something about what he was listening to. And in the background on his computer, you could see a piracy site. So he was illegally downloading music. That probably sums him up in one sentence right there. Here he is, a musician. Well, yeah, okay, loosely said, musician. And he's downloading music illegally. Well done, Kanye. So, you know, that's kind of it for him because I don't even want to talk more about this. So from the How Cool Is This Files. Okay, imagine you're a teacher. And there's so much you can do, you know, financially for students, but is there really? You know, when you really care about students and their well-being and what their future can hold, then you take it to the limits. A teacher in South Carolina wanted to do something for boys who don't have a father. I mean, that's pivotal in their life, you know? So he started a gentleman's club. No. Get your minds out of the gutter. No. This is clean. Gentleman's club, where he teaches the boys how to properly shake hands, make eye contact. And he even buys shirts and ties for the kids who can't afford them. His name is Raymond Nelson, and he's at the Memminger Elementary School in South Carolina. Big hand for Raymond. that totally rocks. I mean, the fact that he takes such pride in his students and ingraining such an important part of who you are and how you represent yourself. Because I say to people, you know, no matter what field you're in marketing, whether you're writing code, whether you're designing airplanes, a nurse or a doctor, you're all in marketing because we always have to market ourselves for who we are and what we do. Because we should always be kind of in the back of our minds looking for the next step, thinking about, okay, well, if this implodes wherever you're at and whatever you do, what about option B or C? You know, that's not a bad thing. So for kids to have such a head start, you know, I taught my son, he's six now, probably at four, he had a pretty good shake because every time he shook my hand, it was kind of, you know, jelly. Like I'd say, like, don't give me a dead fish here. I want something solid, and look me in the eye. So when he's out, whatever, we're in the store and he sees one of my friends, he shakes his hands or her hand and looks him in the eye and greets them appropriately. So that's really appropriate, whether it's on a personal level, certainly, or a professional level. And certainly teaching kids how to present themselves in an attire way, A-T-T-I-R-E, in a fashion sense. You know, maybe they're a business that they go into won't require a tie or a business suit for a woman or a dress or whatever the case may be. But it's showing kids, I'm not sure the demographic in this town of South Carolina. Well, Charleston. Charleston is a pretty, I think, middle-class town. From what I've seen of it, it looks very, very beautiful. So I would imagine it's a middle class or upper middle class town. So possibly there's certainly students who couldn't afford shirts and ties, and certainly maybe at that age, there's no reason for them except if they're going to an event or something. But great, great, great move on the teacher's part, Raymond Nelson, for doing an outstanding thing, for also because it sets a precedent for the other students to say, hey, wow, look at these kids, man. They look pretty cool. They look like they got it going on, right? I mean, you know, kids who really are articulate, present themselves well, you know, you can get far in this world. As a matter of fact, you just appear older. And when you start at such a young age such as this, when you go into high school, you're going to have a better presence. And when you start interviewing for colleges, you're going to be so far ahead of the game. As a matter of fact, one of my babysitters was over the other night. Right before my wife and I went out, she was talking to us, and she's on a debate team. And she's a sophomore in high school. And I could not believe how articulate, how professional, what kind of acumen she has at such a young age. And I'm just so, so impressed with some of the teenagers nowadays, because there's two ways to look at the technological aspect. Like, you know, it's kind of a social, et cetera, because it takes away from your personal skills. But at the same time, I think their ability to write has, hopefully they're writing in full sentences and not constant abbreviations and smiley faces, et cetera. But I think they become so much more verbal. And it can go the opposite as well, the opposite way as well, because, you know, they can take it to an extreme where they don't have a lot of contact, et cetera, et cetera. But some of the teenagers that I do know, and certainly a lot of them that I meet in school when I speak at schools, high schools or colleges, some of the questions are really astute. And I'm really impressed with this generation on some degree. On another degree, we'll leave that topic for another time. Anyway, so I'm really, really, really pleased to see that Raymond Nelson and hopefully other teachers around the world and our country are getting notoriety as well about doing something like this. Because, hey, teachers have a rough job. I know it's hard. They don't get paid a lot of money, and you're teaching the same thing mostly day in, day out. But to have an impact on students so young like that is totally cool. So I had the pleasure of having Isaac Zablocki. He's the president of the Disabilities, Real Abilities Film Festival in New York City, which is happening now through the 16th. So it starts today, happens through the 16th, and it's a great film festival. It happens throughout New York City. This is the 8th annual one. It's grown tremendously. They have incredible films about and by people with disabilities. And here's a trailer of the movie we're going to be talking about, and our director, Abigail Fuller, is going to be joining us momentarily. But here's what I want you to play you first. This is from the movie Do You Dream in Color. Most of the trailer is has audio. Near the end, there's text. Obviously, we're going to fade out. But I want to give you a good taste of this film, Do You Dream in Color?
I started seeing things that weren't there. It just started getting blurry and dark. So when I couldn't see anything anymore. And that's how it's been ever since.
People always ask me the question, how do you skate? You're blind.
It's all in the ears. It's all in these two things sitting, you know, on the sides of your head. And it's something that paints pictures in your mind.
My dream is to study overseas during my senior year.
What would a person like me have to do to roll with a team like Active?
It would be a dream come true to graduate with everyone else. My mom, oh my gosh, she would be so proud.
A dream for me now would be to form a metal band, go out and rock the world.
There's always concerns about you traveling in a country by yourself.
She was born blind and she wants to go to Portugal.
I was never really accepted. I never fit in with anyone. And I think the majority of the reason was because I was blind.
They said that geometry was inappropriate for me because it was too visual.
Teachers have, you know, 30 to 40 other students that they have to keep on track. It's a lot easier to let the students like Karina go.
Everyone says I have sexy eyes. Every single girl always asks me, what do you look like without your glasses? I take my glasses off. Everyone says I have sexy eyes. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but I hope it is.
Not having sight, it's a way of life that's part of me. Things are much more intimate. You don't have the option of looking at something from a distance. You have to get right up close and touch it.
Do You Dream in Color? That's the trailer there. Won Best Documentary, Best Directors at a lot of different film festivals. That is from director, award-winning director, who has also produced and directed nonfiction content for National Geographic, MTV, Sundance Channel, Cooking Channel, Food Network, Travel Channel, and many, many more. Welcome to the show, Abigail Fuller. Hey, Abigail, how you doing?
Hey, it's good to be here.
It's probably better to be out where you are, out west. But then again, we got some pretty rocking weather here.
Yeah, I hear. I'm actually flying there early tomorrow morning for the festival, so I'm looking forward to it. The sunshine gets a little boring.
So first question, Abby, when you were in high school, did you have any peers with disabilities?
You know what? I don't think that it was not really that I know of. There were definitely people within my high school, but they were, as oftentimes is done with students with disabilities, almost segregated. So there weren't individuals that I was able to befriend or have a real meaningful experience with and really understand what they were, what their kind of disability or abilities, how they were impacting their lives.
Now,
at that age, anyway.
Sure, exactly. Now, Do You Dream in Color is being shown this Sunday. We're going to be giving the information out, details shortly, but it's about four teens, you know, teenage years full of angst. I mean, alone is just very, very terrifying and can make your skin cringe just thinking about my years and maybe for you, your years, who knows? Hopefully you have better years than me. But now for these particular four students, they were also blind. So that makes the troublesome and hurdles that much harder. So number one, how did you pick these four individuals and how come the disability of blindness?
Well, yeah, I think that what you just hit on is something really interesting, is that that coming of age time of our life is a struggle for anyone. We all feel like we're different. We all feel like we don't fit in. Trying to kind of understand our place in the world is really challenging. And then you add something like blindness to the mix, where these students don't even have other people within their schools or their communities or their families that they can look to as role models. So they're figuring out who they are as humans and individuals and who they want to grow into as they become adults. And then they realize, oh, nobody understands who I am. Nobody really understands what I'm capable of. In fact, people think I'm capable of a lot less than I am, and that's going to be a huge problem for me. So we thought that was a really interesting human experience to explore. And then once we kind of decided to dive into that, we wanted to represent a diverse group of stories each of the four characters that we follow in the film have kind of different obstacles related to their blindness. You know, Connor has trouble fitting in and gets, you know, has a lot of bullying issues, whereas with Karina, it's more about, you know, access to education and dealing with legal issues and more institutional barriers. So each of the four kind of has a different representation of some of the obstacles that a disability can cause when you're dealing with people who don't understand.
But the common bond is dreaming and having goals, which we, most of us all do. And even at a young age like that, we may, you know, stray from our path before we go into the workforce or to go on to college and to further education. But, you know, I'm not sure which names apply to each one, but one of them wants to be a skateboarder. Another wants to travel the world. One of the kids wants to be a drummer. One of the boys wants to be a rock star. And another one wants to be the first family member to graduate high school. And these are very, very compelling and very lofty goals.
Yeah, I think that they're both lofty. I mean, in the kind of casting process, which you mentioned before, we wanted to make sure that we had people who had goals that you wanted to root for them and that we could really track that. But as much as they are lofty, they wouldn't be extraordinary necessary. I mean, most young people can identify with having, you know, a garage band or trying to get through the hurdles of graduating high school. And so as much as they are extraordinary and, you know, being a blind skateboarder and being the first member of your family to graduate high school, they're also very relatable for most of us.
When you heard about, or when you're in the casting process, Abby, and when you heard about the blind skateboarder, did you say, I have to see this to believe it?
Yeah, I think we first met, we were at the very tail end of the casting process, and we went, you know, the organizations and the community has been a huge help for us along the way. And we went to an event for, I think it was the Braille Institute here in Southern California, and when we went up, we met Connor. We were like, wow, this guy has, you know, such a great personality, and he's so, like, excited and energetic, and we just want to know more about him. And then he said, oh, I have to go home because I have to practice my skateboarding. So right then we knew, we're like, is this kid, you know, completely, is he lying, or is this kind of something that is going to be an incredible story? And it ended up being the latter.
How much of the disability world were you familiar with before the film, Abby?
You know, it wasn't, it was through immersion with the community and the kids that really kind of made us transition from filmmakers. I have a co-director on this, Sarah Ivy, and it, you know, we really transitioned from filmmakers to advocates throughout the process. And when we, you know, the original idea when we set off to make the film, we were at film school at USC and had just graduated. And so I thought it would be interesting to make an animated film about the dreams of blind people, hence the title, which never changed. And we started, you know, that's what led us into this community, was just to try to create some really cool visuals about what that experience is like. And then once we started spending time with these people, these young teenagers, and experiencing what they were experiencing and getting to know and love them and care about them and their stories, it soon transitioned that, like, the metaphorical dreams were a much more powerful story than their sleeping dreams, which were, you know, pretty, like, I was eating a sandwich or, you know, I was doing my homework. And, you know, the burden of creating a representation of that that experience of their sleeping dreams, which isn't exactly visual and is very complicated to understand. It becomes a very science heavy. It wasn't the same, and it wasn't as compelling as watching these people and, you know, get through some of these hurdles in life.
Sure. Now, Abby, yourself, along with your producer, Regina Saldivar, I didn't see the movie, unfortunately. I will see it on Sunday, and I have the pleasure of being the moderator of your film festival when it's shown.
Great.
Were there aspects where, obviously, the subjects are actually speaking to the camera, where you're obviously having a one-on-one conversation or they're speaking to the camera, and then also most of the aspects are you following them around during their typical day in school?
So, yeah, it's a mixture of interview and verite content. So we spent about 2 weeks total over the course of a year filming with each of the characters, and so we kind of checked in with them at different points along their journey. So with Sarah, who's trying to get sponsored by AFS, which is a study abroad program, you know, we would kind of go to those major checkpoints of, like, when she had to do her fundraiser, when she had to do her application, when she had to have an interview, when she got the phone call. Yeah, so we kind of plotted our filming schedule around those events and then also captured, just like you said, just normal day in the life, with their families, with their friends, going to school, things like that. So it was pretty strategic, though, around the arc of those goals that we were following.
Abby Fuller is the director of a new film, Do You Dream in Color, a part of the Real Abilities Film Festival happening now through the 16th. You can log on to realabilitiesfilmfestival.org, realabilitiesfilmfestival.org, and I'll give you more information as the show progresses here. Now, we mentioned before that you didn't probably have that much exposure with people with disabilities before the movie, but you probably had some, you know, expectations or preconceived notions. Now, during the filming, you said you spent 2 weeks with each individual character or subject, which is, there are four subjects, four students?
Four of them, yep.
Four.
You got
so
it.
That's 8 weeks. Were there times where you just in complete awe of either something they could accomplish or some barrier that you never would have dreamed of with such a gargantuan device that would prevent them from doing something? And how your heart probably went out for them?
Well, I mean, Karina's story is really, we've toured the film with different festivals around, this is the last one we're doing, so it's been in the circuit for a year now. And it's incredible how when each festival we go to, people come up to us afterwards, and I expect no different, especially at Real Abilities. But the struggles that she faced, that we noticed with battling, you know, her school district, is a very, very, very too common of a story that it's incredibly outrageous.
Hmm.
Karina, her mom is a housemaid and was an illegal immigrant and did not, you know, have the know-how to how to help Karina with her education. And so when the school districts weren't providing her with her materials in Braille and, you know, not giving her access to education the same way other students are given it if they're sighted, you know, there was no one really to stick up for her. And oftentimes the school districts take an attitude of they're putting out fires. So unless there's some sort of litigation,
yeah,
or somebody's raising a flag,
mm-hmm,
they're not going to invest the, you know, $6,000 to $8,000 for a Braille textbook if nobody's knocking on their door saying, you better do this or else.
Yeah, all too common.
So unfortunately, it's all too common, and that was the thing that we, you know, we really, our hearts went out to her, and so we were trying to, you know, help, like, even tutor her or, you know, help read things to her at some point, because, you know, there is that fine line with documentary of, like, how much do you want to get involved in the problem?
Sure.
And the moral implications of that, either as a filmmaker or just as a human. And I think in this case, even though there was very little that we could do to really change her outcome, you know, we decided that if there was anything we could do to help her, that we were willing and able to do that.
Well, it sounds certainly like you did. And just the movie itself is a platform for change, because obviously, how many film festivals would you say you've been at prior to Real Abilities?
This is number 13 or 14 now.
So 13 or 14. Any hope for a distribution?
Yeah, we have a distributor that we're with, and we're kind of figuring out the plan of how we're going to roll it out, but it will be this summer.
Great, fantastic. So that is a platform that, you know, gets the word out, gets hopefully, you know, schools will be able to have copies of this possibly down the road.
Absolutely.
Maybe with your, we're going to talk about this in a few minutes, your relationship with Netflix, maybe something can be established there. But it's pivotal for schools and people of all ages to see this, because it's about, you know, everyone has adversity in life. And especially at such a young age, I mean, it sets the tone of who you are. It really shapes your personality and how you deal with life and how you react in personal relationships, professional relationships. Everything has such a gargantuan impact on who you are and who you become. So it's vital for, you know, films like this to expose what is available and even more importantly, what's not available. Like you just mentioned, I mean, accommodation wise, I mean, I think there's so much that schools do not do. Until they're forced to do, like you said, you know, unless they're, and they feel like they're just putting out fires because, you know, I understand budgets, but you know what? Equal footing, my friends.
It's in the law.
Yeah.
Mark, I mean, you bring up something.
It certainly
really,
is.
It is in the law, you know, it's just whether or not they're enforced. And, you know, it's tough for any student. I mean, we've been, privy to all sorts of documentaries coming out about all of the problems within our education system holistically. So if you think for a student without disabilities in a low-income school district, it's difficult. Now add something like blindness to the mix. That's expensive and needs special time and a kind of a customized program for somebody to really succeed. And what are the chances that they're actually going to get it? It's pretty slim.
Abby, were these students in different schools or in the same school that you filmed?
They were all over the state of California. Connor was in Burbank and Karina in Costa Mesa, so they were in our Southern California. And then Sarah was on the Central Coast and Nick was in San Jose. So the filming was a lot of road trips.
So socioeconomically, were they pretty much all within the same means or did it run the gamut?
Yeah, it ran the gamut, and you can see the difference. You know, Nick, who's one of the characters that kind of has the opposite situation as Karina, where he also, you know, he actually doesn't even have a school to go to for several months, and his sighted twin brother does. But his school just failed to provide any sort of way for him to access the materials or have a teaching for the visually impaired or anything.
Wow.
And his mom took leave of her job, and they spent $50,000 in lawyers and legal advocates.
Whoa.
To sue the school district and put a system into place. And
that should already be in place.
We had a great program after that, but that's what it took. Mm. Months of work, of research, of fighting, and $50,000 out of their own pockets.
Now, please go ahead.
Yeah, and it's just not many families can do that. So you look at, this is a situation that Karina's in as a single mom who's a housemaid who doesn't even speak English and is an illegal immigrant. And, you know, she's not going to be able to provide that for her daughter like Nick's parents can do for him.
Now, without mentioning any the teens' names, because we don't want to spoil the film, so if anyone wants to see it this Sunday in New York City, or a future down the road, whatever platform is going to be shown on, which or any of the teens did you have in your mind, maybe if someone read the bubble above your head, saying to yourself, well, this one's really going to be able to make it, or this person's really going to have one hell of a life in terms of roadblocks?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get, like I said, they have different challenges. So they're all up against different things, and some of them are graver than others. But, you know, I think this education is the biggest deal that we really look at and the most severe case of injustice. And then, you know, but they all really have their own personal, emotional, compelling struggles in their own way. You know, one of the characters wants to revisit the country. Her mom passed away when she was 5, and she wants to travel to that country to reconnect with her mom, where her mom was from. And because she's blind, there's a big question mark about whether or not she's going to be allowed to go there. She was cited it wouldn't be an issue. So you know, that's a very emotional and personal struggle for her, even though it's not necessarily as severe and grave as something like not being able to go to school. So they all have their own personal things that they have to overcome, and they're all really incredible, lovable characters that I'm sure anyone who comes to the screening will care about them and laugh and cry with us and learn something about that experience.
And have a great discussion afterwards. Now, recently you worked with Ron Howard on his film Breakthrough, The Age of Aging, and for National Geographic Channel. You've done a lot of other great projects, also currently directing on season 2, congratulations, of Netflix original series Chef's Table. So it seems like this is a real departure for you. Do you dream in color?
I do all nonfiction content about, you know, all different types of stories, I think. Real people and compelling stories. It could be anything. So I do a lot of food content and science and all sorts of things. But I think that this project is the project that, you know, I set out to make myself. It's, you know, my independent film as opposed to something that I was, you know, hired to do by a network. As much as I, you know, really feel as though these other projects, especially Chef's Table, is something that I'm very close to and very proud of. I think that Do You Dream in Color is something that is the type of stuff that I'd like to continue doing that really has meaning and can create change and act as a platform, like you said earlier.
Well, we're certainly glad you did. And finally, I have to ask you a question now. You sound so young and so accomplished. Now, how did you get the backing for something of this? And also, I want to congratulate you on the fortitude and having the vision to do something so important as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm not as young as I was when we first started filming. It took us six years from when we first decided to make it to when it was actually done. So it was a long process of actually finding the money and a stop and go while we're doing other projects. And, making a documentary film isn't easy. And especially when you don't have the money in place and you're kind of figuring out a lot of things as you go. So that was difficult, but it was also very rewarding because every time we would make a stride, it felt really good because we worked for it. So at this point, to be able to kind of finally share it for everyone and also have such, you know, the reactions from the blind community and the disability community, like at Real Abilities, and from the teenagers themselves and their families, the teenagers who are no longer teenagers, their reaction being so positive for us was, I think, you know, one of the most important things is that the community that we're trying to kind of share their story as somebody who isn't disabled, like that's something you want to do well and make sure you represent that experience. And, you know, the fact that everyone loves the film and we shot at Superfest in San Francisco and Lighthouse for the Blind and National Federation of Blind said, hey, we want to take this to Congress.
Oh, great.
You know, this is a great tool for us to be able to show exactly what's happening in a way that people don't quite grasp, and you captured it.
Kudos to you, Abby. Nice.
A big compliment.
Yeah, that's great. That's incredible. I mean, oh my God. Well, that says it all. That encapsulates. What a great way to end the interview. You pulled that out in the last seconds, huh? You were saving that nugget of information. Well, we should also add that it's 76 minutes, and it's provided with an audio description, which is more importante.
Fully accessible for all audience members, blind, deaf. Yep.
And it's happening this Sunday, March 13th at 2 p.m. at the JCC Manhattan's L2 Auditorium. That's 344 Amsterdam Avenue at 76th Street. Again, you can go on to realabilities.org. That's R-E-E-L, abilities.org. The name of the film is Do You Dream in Color? Abby has been my guest, Abby Fuller. Do you have a website, Abby?
I don't have a website, but we have a Facebook page for the film, which I encourage everyone to get on because that's where all the updates are for distribution and screenings and things like that. So just search Do You Dream in Color on Facebook, and you can find us there.
So we invite everyone to join us this coming Sunday, and also with your producer, Regina Saldivar. And afterwards, after the screening, we're going to have a Q&A session. So if you'd like to meet Abby and her producer, Regina, please do join us. Thank you so much for your time, Abby. Really stupendous work on every level, because it's really eye-opening. Everyone needs to see films of this nature, because it just makes us more of a compassionate and sensitive society. And hopefully, especially if members of Congress see this, that it will be more eye-opening, and they'll obviously create some more funding and critical legislation that can really impact, you know, tens and tens of thousands of people.
That's the dream.
Have a safe trip over, and we'll see you Sunday, Abby.
Thank you.
Cheers.
All right. See you then, Mark.
Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good day. Bye.
Insight will continue right after this. My name is Mark Farrell. This is PRN.FM.
Stay tuned to PRN, your source for the best in progressive radio.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, is all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is journalist Dave Lindorf. I'll be hosting the show This Can't Be Happening each Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on PRN.FM. Because we know it is happening, each week's program will feature some issue that's been getting ignored or misreported, like Social Security, climate change, military spending, or the government's destruction of the Internet. Please join me at This Can't Be Happening on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
The mind is the brain.
The mind is a garden we tend.
The mind is a hive of memes.
The mind is a monkey who needs to chill.
The mind is a magic deck.
The mind is a web, and you are a spider.
Looking for in-depth conversations about mysticism and mind science?
Technology and visionary experience?
Religion and uncanny culture?
Tune in to Expanding Minds.
With Eric Davis.
And Maja Daou.
On the Progressive Radio Network.
Or download us on iTunes.
And remember, keep your mind open.
This is Mike Fader, host of The Turning Point and Occupied Territory. And you're listening to PRN.FM, your very best source for progressive programming.
And welcome back to Insight. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight, as I just said, on PRN.FM. Love to hear your feedback. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. So, I'm opening my phone here, and I'm giving you the temperature in New York City as we speak at 1143 Eastern Standard Time. It's 73 degrees! Yes! Love it, love it, love it. All right, if you're somewhere cold, I'm sorry. Hopefully that warm trend is going to be coming your way soon. So listen, I think there's kind of three people in this world. People who love American Idol, people who love The Voice, and the third and probably biggest group, people who could care less. So I kind of fit into the first group. I like American Idol. I've watched it on and off for the past several years. It's the last season, etc. But my wife had on The Voice last night, and something really cool happened. It's totally different in terms of the show's production, in terms of how you can win, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to point out something pretty neat, because they had a singer on there. As a father with a son born with a rare disease, disability that causes him to have stiff joints that make movement painful. So the doctor said that his son would never be able to walk. And the performer and father that we're talking about is Nick Hagelin. I believe that's how you pronounce his name, Nick Hagelin. He's a former ballet dancer. The guy's, like, incredibly built. Just some svelte guy. Good-looking guy. His wife is beautiful. His kid is gorgeous. And it was really a nice, heartfelt story because, you know, they always do the background story of, you know, you want your heart goes out to these people. You want them to win because, number one, they're really good or they're not that good. But the backstory is exceptional. The producers really do a good job on these shows. Anyway, so I was watching last night. I saw Nick's story. And then they were showing the pre-produced piece about his son. And then you can see his son walking with a lot of labor involved. But he's walking. And he's adorable. And Nick looked at the camera and said, no matter what happens here and no matter what happens in life, the biggest accomplishment I've had is to teach my son to walk. I mean, how can you top that? I mean, when you have doctors and experts saying that this is something that's not going to happen, and then you do it yourself, a parent. I mean, we were talking about parents before and earlier in the show about, you know, the role that the definition of parents' role just never ends. And, you know, certainly with a disability and with our guest, Abigail Fuller, who was just on, who produced the movie Do You Dream in Color, about four teens in high school that are blind. I mean, it's an incredible journey. So a parent's job certainly is not to be cliche, but never, never done. So it's really cool to see this produce and part of The Voice last night. And even cooler that after Nick performed, they brought his son out. And here he is on stage, totally, totally gleaming, like shining and happy and so effervescent and just a very, very healthy and happy little boy. And his wife came out as well. And it's great. I'm sure if you Google it, you can see that. And I'm not a huge fan of Carson Daly. I think he's totally, totally overrated. But you know what? From what I saw, you know, he's a good dude and he's hugging the young. His name is Bash, the son. His young, hugging young Bash is the, you know, the family watched on and the father, Nick, performed. And so, I mean, Carson is great with the family, certainly. But the icing on the cake is, you know, when a coach has had his wife and son on stage, when he decided that he won. You know, obviously it's a victory for everybody, and seeing something of that caliber come to fruition is really, really nice. So congratulations. Just another interesting story from How Cool Is This File? How Cool Is This Files? So when's the last time you doped? You know, for me, it's been a while. You know, ever since Lance Armstrong got caught, I figured I'd cut back a little bit. So Lance Armstrong was a big idol of mine. Even though I'm visually impaired, I've been a cyclist for all my life. Because I never got my driver's license until I was 25. And people say to me, well, how the hell can you ride a bike competitively? Well, it's kind of like I don't know any different. And I ride very carefully. And when people are looking like 20, 50 feet, 100 feet down the road, I'm looking like 5, 10 feet ahead of me, looking for debris, potholes, empty beer bottles, whatever the case may be. So, and I certainly have my fair share of close calls, but I've actually never, never, never had a bad accident, knock on wood, for Mica, or whatever this is. No lavish PRN studios here. But it's something that I'm very, very passionate about. So, of course, you know, I took to Lance Armstrong when he started winning his first tour, second tour, third tour, fourth tour, and so on and so on. And then I started getting a little bit leery about, you know, what he was doing, et cetera. So I've been off the Lance Armstrong party train for quite some time. And it brings me to our next story because tennis star, as you probably have heard, Maria Sharapova. Man, I'm goddamn tired today. You know who I'm talking about. Is suspended after failing her drug test in January. That was at the Australian Open, I believe. She admits to taking the banned substance for 10 years, but it was only recently banned this January in 2016. She got a letter from the Tennis Association, and the name of the drug is Melatonin. Again, it was banned in January. She's been using it legally for all these years. And this is, we're talking about a five-time Grand Slam champion here. Five-time Grand Slam champion. That is huge. I mean, a Russian-born and raised Maria Sharapova. I'll get it right. She's beautiful. Anyway, she's totally, totally bummed. She's crestfallen. And my point is, I wanted to bring this up because, you know, it's becoming more and more commonplace for top athletes, and I'm sure rising athletes, to take banned substances for whatever reason, to stave off injury, to improve performance, etc. And it's something that is so common that I kind of understand. I put myself and try to put myself in their shoes, whether it's a tennis shoe or a football cleat, a baseball cleat or a basketball shoe, to understand, certainly to stay in the game, as Lance Armstrong thought, and many cyclists, because there was a domino effect, huge domino effect after Lance went down or prior to his demise, that to stay in the game, you have to kind of get in the game of using substances that'll enhance your performance. So it's got to be a very, very difficult decision to realize and or to contemplate, A, do I keep going naturally, working extremely hard, maybe a third or a quarter or maybe a half, 50% harder than everybody else, and risk more injury and only achieve maybe mediocre status or never get to that one position? First of all, not in every sport there's only one number one, whether it's a team, depending whether it's a football team, baseball team, soccer team, however big or small the team is, there only can be number one. And then, of course, you have individual sports like tennis. So the question is, I mean, you have to make that crucial decision. Do you stay true to yourself, true to the sport? It's got to be a very difficult decision, because if this is something you've worked your entire life for, I mean, you could have started playing tennis at, say, 5 years old, 7 years old, cycling, obviously a very young age, 4 years old, 5 years old, football, whatever the sport may be. You've dedicated your entire life. Your family has sacrificed so much. You've sacrificed so much, possibly an education. But maybe it's a lucrative sport for you now and becoming more lucrative. Maybe you're on the precipice of making a multi-million dollar deal, getting sponsorships out the wazoo. Possibly you're nearing the end of your career and maybe you're seeing a position with a network or a company that would be in line with the sport that you're presently involved in. So it's got to be so, so difficult to come to a decision whether to use or not to use. And I think it comes down to a personal answer, because you have to understand the consequences, number one, being caught. I mean, Maria, yes, she's been using it for 10 years. She won the 5 Grand Slams. Is her name going to be dragged in mud? I really don't think so, since it's only been a couple of months. Will people say that she shouldn't have won those Grand Slams because she was using? But if it was legal back then the playing field was level. Other tennis stars, athletes could have been using it as well. So it's got to be very, very difficult. I would say if I was in that position that I wouldn't use. But that is, you know, me stating this very safely, not in a position where you could lose your future, be cast aside because of excessive injuries that you can't recover from, that certain banned substances actually help in recovery and certainly your longevity. But speaking of longevity, you don't know the actual result 30 years down the road. What kind of health toll is it going to take? Maybe we'll ask the expert Gary Null, who's coming on after this show. If you want, you can give him a call and say, Mark told me to call you and ask you this very important question. And maybe we can get Maria in here. I'm sure Gary and I would both like to interview Maria, and maybe we can get her in there. Producer Jesse, see if you can have that happen here. We'll buy her lunch from Gary's very, very tasty, fresh, whole food restaurant and shop. Anyway, so that's the deal. It got me thinking about that. I know we only have a few minutes left in the program here. If you have any concerns or comments, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Of course, you can always hit me up at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. I don't know the length of her suspension, but it's got to be really, really embarrassing, because here you are. You received a letter. I'm sure every athlete who's on the circuit received a letter, and it should have been actually certified. Maybe it was that you had signed it. But Maria should have read the goddamn letter. She said she kind of, I guess, browsed it, grazed against across the letter and didn't read the thing thoroughly. But, you know, it's to her demise. But it's got to be, again, going back to my point, very, very difficult to make that decision, because so much relies on that. Because maybe people's lifestyle reflects the income. And then if they stop using or don't use, they realize, okay, well, I'm not going to be able to perform as well as I have been the last 5 years, 8 years, or I only have 2 more years left. I've never used so far. So if I only use the last 2 years of my professional career, chances are I won't get caught, or people will understand I'm so well-liked, they'll turn a blind eye, you know, et cetera. I mean, my thing is Americans suffer from amnesia. I mean, look how many people, whether they're using drugs or not, or, you know, Elliot Spitzer, who has obviously a major sex compulsion, you know, he would have made it back if he didn't get busted again. I mean, how stupid can you be? But I mean, we give people 2, 3, 4 chances in this country, depending on the crime and or scandal. But the reality is, you know, it's a very, very difficult decision for professional athletes. But the reality is you have to remember you are a role model. And that's important because when you were growing up as a young person, a boy or a girl, and you looked to up to every tennis star, soccer player, whatever that sport specific that you were totally in love with, imagine what that news would have done to you. Just like the news of Lance Armstrong did for me. Food for thought. Well, that's all I got. I got to go outside and get some incredible fresh Big Apple air because it's 78 degrees in the Big Apple. Thank you so much to our incredible crew here, producer Jesse, program director Jason Todmanfeld. Gary Knowles coming up next. My name is Mark Farrell. You can catch this show and any show on PRN.fm on the Insight page. Feel free to email me, Mark at MarkFarrellMotivation.com. If you'd like me to speak at your school, K-12, college, corporation, my website is MarkFarrellMotivation.com. That's F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, Motivation.com. Special thanks to Abby Fuller, director of Do You Dream in Color, and make sure you check out her film this Sunday, March 13th at 2 p.m. at the JCC Manhattan's L2 Auditorium at 33 Amsterdam Avenue and 76th Street. RealAbilitiesFilmFestival.org, RealAbilitiesFilmFestival.org. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day. Don't forget, daylight savings time. Move that clock ahead on Sunday. Bye.